laudable objectives. The government gave a concrete shape to its intentions in terms of the objectives of the various plans. These objectives have, of course, varied in the different plans, depending upon the situation that each plan had to face. However, when these objectives are read together, one can describe them along three broad lines. One is the aim of increasing substantially the agricultural production and productivity of land. The emphasis has been on raising the agricultural growth rate in general. Special attention has also been devoted to increase the production of certain crops, in particular food grains. Improving the productivity of land has been considered necessary as there is little scope for extensive cultivation. 2. The land reforms have been another important objective, since the agrarian relations in the beginning were found to be such as caused disincentives to investments and hard work on the part of actual cultivators and entailed their exploitation, the change in the agrarian system was considered essential both for raising production and doing justice to the farmers. 3. There is the objective of uplifting the weaker sections of the population associated with agriculture. These are, for example, the small and marginal farmers, landless agricultural laborers, and many of those engaged in activities allied to agriculture, such as animal husbandry, fisheries, etc. While these are supposed to benefit from the general growth, it has been realized that these people are so handicapped in terms of income or work or assets or skills or inputs that for the improvements of their conditions, special programs are called for. Largely appropriate measures. For the achievement of these objectives, many measures have been contemplated or undertaken. For example, to raise production and productivity, three main types of measures have been provided in the plans. One concerns the supply of inputs, both traditional like extension of irrigation and modern like laboratory research seeds, chemical fertilizers, etc. 2. Infrastructural facilities have been expanded. These include credit, marketing, storage, extension services, transport, education, information dissemination, etc. 3. Money incentives have also been given in a large measure and in various forms. These, for example, price incentive through procurement of products at pre-announced prices, supply of cheap or subsidized material inputs, concessional credit, crop insurance, etc. As for the objective of land reforms is concerned, the provisions touch upon the various weak facets of the agrarian relations. These include abolition of jamindari system, securing just and fair conditions for tenants, ceiling on land ownership and distribution of surplus land among the weak farmers, and consolidation of small and scattered holdings. In regard to the objective of raising the economic status of the poor, the measures consisted of special programs devised to provide work or asset or inputs to specified groups of people or areas. These special programs are Integrated Rural Development Program, that is IRDP, or National Rural Employment Program, NREP, now merged in Jawahar Rozgar Yojana. Considerable resources. In keeping with the objectives, large resources have been devoted to agricultural development. These have been on the rise from plan to plan. The amount of resources or funds from agriculture and allied activities like animal husbandry, fisheries, etc. were about Rs. 300 crores in the first plan. In the 8th plan, these were 375 times more at Rs. 22,467 crores. The 9th plan, which was from 1997 to 2002, has allocated a much bigger sum at Rs. 37,546 crores. To these, if we add allocations for irrigation and flood control, as also on rural development and on special programs for the benefit of rural people, the total becomes much large, even larger than that for industrial development. Elements of progress. Various changes have taken place in the agricultural sector in the past since independence, more particularly in recent years. Some are positive developments which point to the emerging progressive character of this sector. These are, however, certain elements which are not healthy. We take up first the spheres where the performance has been somewhat satisfactory. Increase in production and productivity. One such key sphere with somewhat good results is production and productivity, where some increase has indeed taken place. As far as the production is concerned, the growth rate since the first plan, that was in 1951 and 56, has been of the order of 2.7% per annum. This is much better performance when compared to the historical growth rate before independence, which stagnated at 0.3% during 1900 to 1947. The growth rate is also higher, though marginally, than the population growth. As among various crops, there have been very large increases in the much needed crop for the masses, namely food grains. This has made India nearly self-sufficient in this respect. There is again an improvement in the productivity of land. This is of great significance as there is very little scope for extensive cultivation. The annual growth rate, that is compound annual growth rate of yield for all crops, was around 1.3% till the middle of the 1960s. Since then, that is after the inception of Green Revolution, it has been higher at over 2.5%. While this achievement is impressive, its importance lies in so far as it has helped in overcoming the limitation of land area, which has increased little. This is evident from the fact that from the 50s to the 90s, that is from 1949 to 50 to 1992 to 93, while the production grew at the rate of 2.7%, the area grew at under 0.6% and the yield at about 2.9%. Trend towards diversification. Another change indicative of progress is the tendency towards diversification of agriculture. Three types of developments need to be mentioned in this context. 1. The share of output of the non-crop sectors, that is animal husbandry, forestry and fishery, in the total agricultural output is on the increase, albeit slowly. Along with this shift in output, there is an increase in the labor force engaged in the non-crop sectors. 2. Within the cropping sector, there is an increase in the area under commercial crops. This is obvious from the fact that there is a decline in the area sown under food grains, with a negative rate of growth under coarse cereals ever since 1980-81, and a rise in that under non-food grains crops, with a high rate of growth under cotton and sugarcane since 1990 and 91. 3. Within the food grains crops, superior cereals, that is wheat and rice, are being grown on a larger area than before. At the same time, the area under the inferior cereals, that is pearl millet, sorghum, etc., is on the decline. These changes, though small, point to the movement of agricultural sector towards development. As has happened in the development economies, when they were on the way to an advanced economic stage, the rise in their incomes were accompanied by shifts towards non-crop sectors and within cropping sectors towards commercial crops and superior cereals. Now, the third element of progress is modernization of agriculture. There are some qualitative changes too in the agricultural scene, such that this sector is on the road to becoming a modern sector. This is evident from the following three major changes. First, there is a part of agriculture that is becoming increasingly science-based and industry-linked through the use of laboratory-researched high-yielding varieties of seeds, chemical fertilizers, pesticides, ploughing, threshing machines, etc. This has reduced somewhat the uncertainties of nature to which the traditional agriculture remains subjected to. Second, in some states, agricultural practices have also undergone some changes in case of some crops or areas with intensive cultivation, multiple cropping, scientific water management, etc. Third, there is some improvement also in the knowledge and a change in the attitudes of the farmers through the spread of education or information, demonstration farms, etc. Now, the fourth progress element of progress is increase in capacity. Another improvement of considerable significance is the additions to the agricultural capacity for sustained growth. This is evident from the strengthening of the several growth promoting factors. One such factor, for instance, is irrigation. The irrigation potential at 22.6 million hectares in 1950 has increased to 94.7 million hectares in 1999 and 2000. That is, in 50 years it has increased from 22.6 million hectares to 94.7 million hectares, making India first among the countries of the world in respect of existing irrigation facilities. Second factor of much importance is the establishment of an increase in the facilities for agricultural education and research. Over the years, a number of central institutes, state agricultural universities, and a few public and quasi-public and private institutions have been set up. These have strengthened the capabilities for land surveys, locational testing of research results, development of new high-yielding seeds, agricultural engineering, biotechnology, etc. Third, a facilitative setup providing strength to agriculture is the large increase in the number and variety of institutions dealing with marketing of produce, credit supply, purchase or distribution of inputs, storage, etc. All these changes have added to the muscle and brain power for further agricultural growth. Now, the fifth element of progress is improvement in agrarian system. Through land reforms and agrarian relations have to an extent changed in favor of the actual tillers. This change has been along the following lines. First, the zamindari system created by the British with intermediaries between the government and the cultivators has been abolished. As a result, more than 2 crores of cultivators came into direct contact with the government, ending their exploitation through rack renting, etc. In many cases, ownership was conferred on the cultivators after payment of the price of land. Second, in some states, tenancy conditions have improved through fixation of rents, security of tenure, protection against eviction, etc. Third, under the land ceiling policy, the maximum land that a family can hold has been fixed. Some of the surplus land over the maximum has been acquired, and some of the surplus has been distributed among the weak or the poor cultivators to reduce inequalities and to raise the earning status of the farmers. Fourth, consolidation of small and scattered lands has been achieved to the extent of 51.8 million hectares of land. This has been helpful in reducing the wastages or inefficiencies associated with small and scattered holdings. Improvement in the conditions of the poor. There is again some benefits that have occurred to the agricultural or rural poor. Quite many of them have as a result crossed the line of the poverty. The benefits have flowed through several channels. For example, through the supply of cheap or subsidized material inputs and concessional credit, many small or marginal farmers have raised their output, marketing facilities, government policy of procuring agricultural products at predetermined prices, etc., have been helpful in further raising the income of these cultivators. Fixation of minimum wages has also been a helpful factor in increasing the income of agricultural laborers. Seasonally unemployed and those underemployed have benefited from special programs of rural development like Integrated Rural Development Program, Jawahar Rozgar Yojana, etc. Further, many small or marginal farmers have gained from the various schemes of land reforms. For example, in case of some, land size has increased as under the ceiling policy. Some tenants have become owners of land under the policy of land to the tiller. In large many cases, the tenancy conditions have improved. For many cultivators, the advantage has been in the form of a compact piece under the policy of consolidation of small and scattered holdings. Now we will look at the unsatisfactory features. And the satisfactory features we have covered are increase in production and productivity, trend towards diversification, modernization of agriculture, increase in capacity, improvement in agrarian system, and improvement in the conditions of the poor. Now, the unsatisfactory features. While there are some positive developments pulling agriculture up, there are some unhealthy aspects that continue to keep it down. We mentioned the major weaknesses as under. The first weakness is slow and uneven growth. First, the growth in production and productivity has not been much. The growth rates are not sufficiently high to cope with raising demands on account of fast-growing population, increase in income, and large needs for exports. In the case of certain crops like pulses, oil seeds, fibers, etc., the growth rate have been very small, necessitating large imports. Secondly, the agricultural performance is not uniformly distributed among different crops. As among different crops, there are imbalances in the growth rates, with certain crops like wheat showing high growth rates and the crops like maize, jawar, etc. suffering from low growth rates. Again, as between food grains and non-food grains, the former has experienced higher growth rate compared to the latter. Thirdly, there is also a regional imbalance in the spread of growth. The growth has remained confined to certain areas like Punjab, Haryana, Western UP, etc., which have gone through the Green Revolution. A major part of the land under cultivation, particularly the eastern region, has not as yet used new agricultural techniques. Fourthly, the emphasis so far has been largely on agricultural crops, with little attention or resources devoted to the development of animal husbandry, fisheries, forestry, etc. Now, the second unsatisfactory feature is insufficient modernization. A continuing big drawback of agriculture is that several of its operations remain far from modernized. In fact, overall, it is an old-style agriculture which dominates the rural scene. This is evident from the cultivation practices followed in large many areas, as also the inputs used in several crops. As for cultivation practices, the improvements effected are very little indeed. For example, the pace of increase in the area sown more than once has been very tardy. In the long period of over 43 years since 1950-51, only 44 million hectares have been added to the net area sown. Further, in large many areas and in a number of crops, old or primitive methods of ploughing, sowing, harvesting, etc. are still in vogue. Again, rain-fed areas constituting about two-thirds of the land under cultivation are still without appropriate dry farming techniques. No better is the state of affairs in respect of the use of inputs. As for water, only 39% of the gross cropped area, that is net area sown plus area sown more than once, has irrigation facilities. Equally unsatisfactory is the picture in regard to the use of seeds. The use of HYV, that is high yielding variety seeds, is far from adequate. Except wheat, where some seed cover about 93% of its cropped area, there is not much by way of use of these seeds. In case of the major crops, namely rice, 23% of its cropped area is without HYV seeds, that is high yielding variety seeds. In jawar, as much as 21% of its cropped area uses old farm seeds. In bajra, 26% of land under it does not use HYV seeds. In all, 24% of cropped area under cereals goes without HYV seeds. Further, considering the need and country's potential, there is little by way of researched or applied biotechnologies, genetic engineering, tissue culture, bioinsecticides, etc. Human factor too is still very weak, with little education, training, old unscientific attitudes widespread among many. Inadequate capital. Another weakness of agriculture is the deficiency of capital and slow rise in the capital formation. The capital stock, that is irrigation devices for flood control, land reclamation, prevention of soil erosion, storage, communications, etc., is far less than needed for realizing the full potential of the country's resources, as also for substantially reducing the vulnerability of agriculture to weather-related shocks. The weakness is obvious from the dismal fact that the rate of gross capital formation in agriculture has been a modest one. As a result, in real terms, its share in the total gross capital formation of the country has fallen from about 17%, that was in 1970 and 71, it has fallen from 17% to 6% in 1988 and 99. Unfortunately, there is also a sharp fall in public investment, particularly in irrigation. This can seriously limit efforts at raising water supply, which is a vital requirement for increasing productivity. Unsatisfactory land reforms. The performance in the implementation of land reforms is also far from satisfactory. This is evident from the following. 1. The legislative measures in respect of improvement in conditions of tenants, ceiling on land holdings and distribution of surplus land and consolidation of holdings have not been completed in all the states. 2. The actual implementation of land reforms has been very small. For example, in the case of land ceiling policy, so far only 7.2 million acres have been declared surplus, as against much larger estimates of surplus land. Of the total declared surplus, only 5.6 million acres have been taken possession of and only 4.4 million acres distributed. Under Bhudan, 4.2 million acres of land has been received, but so far about 1.3 million acres have been distributed. In regard to the consolidation of land, with 7 states yet to pass laws on the subject, much remains to be done. Of the 15 states who have enacted laws in this regard, the process of consolidation has been completed fully in only 2 states and nearly completed in six states. Now, another unsatisfactory feature is poor living conditions. A big weakness of agricultural scene is the low level living of the large many associated with agriculture. The number of the rural poor, despite decrease in it in the last few years, continues to be very large, constituting 37% of the rural population. Of these, poor, a significant part belongs to tiny farmers, landless agricultural laborers, and many of those engaged in activities allied to agriculture. Quite a large number in agriculture continues to suffer from seasonal unemployment and underemployment. Large many suffer because they have small-sized and poor quality lands and lack sufficient inputs. Unfortunately, these are also the people who have to support large number per hectare compared to the big farmers. Apart from the low productivity and low incomes or consumption of these people, there are inadequacies in respect of drinking water, health and education facilities, etc. In brief, there are large many who are not able to meet fully their minimum needs. The objective of growth with social justice is therefore far from being fully achieved. To sum up, the progress of agriculture, though fair in some respects, is far from satisfactory in key areas. With this, we have covered the satisfactory and unsatisfactory features of agriculture. Now we will look into the policy. That is National Agriculture Policy 2000.
National Agriculture Policy 2000. In the context of present state of agriculture and its problems, we may now discuss the government's policy entitled the National Agriculture Policy, announced in July 2000. We describe its main features to pinpoint its contents and critically evaluate the same. Main features. In explaining the contents of the policy, we refer to its two components, namely the objectives and means whereby these are to be achieved. Objectives. The policy covers several aspects of the agricultural sector, as is obvious from the official document, which says the national policy on agriculture seeks to actualize the vast untapped growth potential of Indian agriculture, strengthen rural infrastructure to support faster agricultural development, promote value addition, accelerate the growth of agro-business, create employment in rural areas, secure a fair standard of living for the farmers and agricultural workers and their families, discourage migration to urban areas and face the challenges arising out of economic liberalization and globalization. The policy aims at achieving an annual agricultural growth rate of over 4%. It is to be growth that is based on efficient use of resources and conserves soil, water and biodiversity, growth with equality, which is widespread across regions and farmers, growth that is demand driven and caters to domestic markets and maximizes benefits from exports of agricultural products in face of the challenges arising from economic liberalization and globalization, growth that is sustainable technologically, environmentally and economically. The next point is means. For the achievement of objectives, the policy envisages measures that bear upon such important areas as sustainable agriculture, food and nutritional security, generation and transfer of technology, incentives for agriculture, investment in agriculture, institutional structures, risk management and management reforms. The specific measures are many and of a large variety. There are, for example, measures to contain biotic pressures on land and to control indiscriminate diversion of agricultural lands for non-agricultural purposes. Again, it is provided that the unutilized wastelands will be put to use for agriculture and afforestation. As for water, the policy gives the highest priority to the conjunctive use of surface and groundwater. In respect of technology, the organizations dealing with it, namely National Seeds Corporation and State Farms Corporation of India, are to be restructured for efficient utilization of the investment and manpower. In the section of the incentives, the policy document says the domestic agricultural market will be liberalized and all controls and regulations hindering increase in farmers' income will be reviewed and abolished to ensure agriculturalists receive prices commensurate with their efforts and investment. Restrictions on the movement of agricultural commodities throughout the country will be progressively dismantled. The policy provides for the easy availability of credit to the sector. It seeks progressive institutionalization of rural and farm credit to ensure timeliness and adequacy of agricultural credit. The credit is to be made available against pledging of farmers' produce. Besides the facilities available to the manufacturing sector in respect of credit are to be extended to this sector. It is also proposed that the credit institutions be geared to the promotion of saving, investment and risk management. The policy is to remove the distortions in the priority sector lending by the commercial banks. The cooperative credit institutions are sought to be revamped through structural reforms with the aim of freeing them from excessive bureaucratic control and political interference and to promote greater efficiency and viability in their working. The policy provides for the favorable economic environment for increasing capital formation, including farmers' own investment, as also for promoting agricultural exports. The measures envisaged are removal of distortion in the incentive regime of agriculture, improving terms of trade with manufacturing sector, reforming the domestic and external market, and rationalization of tax structure. Private sector investment is also to be encouraged, especially in such areas as agriculture research, human resource development, and post-harvest management and marketing. Private sector is also to be involved in the extension services, that is, technologies transfer through the agri clinics managed by agricultural graduates. In the development of animal husbandry sector, that is, dairying, poultry, livestock grazing, etc., the private sector as also the cooperative are to be inducted in a big way. A set of measures relate to the land reforms. These are meant to encourage consolidation of small and fragmented holding. These also aim at speeding up the reforms in respect of the rights of the tenant and sharecroppers. Updating of land records has also been provided for. The private sector is also brought in through land leasing, that is, giving private lands on lease for agricultural operations and contract farming. The next point is critical evaluation. Having taken up the features of the policy, we now make an assessment of the same. In that, the first one is landable aims. The policy with the time frame of 2 decades has set before itself tasks which go very well with the needs of the economy. The policy, for example, provides for a high growth of agriculture at over 4%, strengthened infrastructure, large value additions in production, faster growth of agro-business, more employment, fair standard of living for cultivators, discouragement of emigration of rural people and facing challenges arising out of liberalization and globalization. The growth envisaged is four-pronged: efficient, equitable, market-driven and sustainable. Such an approach will enable the agricultural sector to overcome its various disabilities from which it suffers at present. These are, for example, a low growth, an uneven and inequitable growth across regions, crops and farmers, low productivity, low exports, low investment, vast unused agricultural resources, backward techniques, etc. The next point is reform oriented. As in aims, so in its means, the policy has provided for some much needed reforms of the agricultural sector. One desirable change concerns the enlargement of the functioning of the market. The policy aims at doing away with several controls besides progressively removing regulations, restrictions on the movement of agricultural commodities. Another important change concerns the provisions for the participation of the private sector in the agricultural sector in a big way. In the farming operations, the private sector is to be involved through land lease arrangements as also through contract farming. In the sphere of investment, the private sector will be encouraged to put in their resources in such important spheres as research, skill formation, post-harvest management and marketing. For technology transfer, that is, extension service, the policy envisages setting up of agri clinics on a private basis for the development of animal husbandry. 2. The policy provides for a bigger role for the private sector. The policy has also emphasized the land reforms on the agrarian system. It has provided for the consolidation of small and scattered holdings, which will make them viable. Provision has also been made to the improvement of the conditions of the tenants and sharecroppers, which constitute a big promotion of the cultivators. Improvements in the land records has also been given an important place in the policy. The next point is comprehensive in nature. The policy is good also for the reason that it is all-embracing in its scope. It brings in its orbit almost all that concerns agriculture, farming, animal husbandry, fisheries, both marine and inland, and agri-business. In the development of the sector, the policy covers almost all the aspects of agriculture, investment, growth, productivity, terms and trades, technology, environment, liberalization, globalization, etc. In dealing with these, the policy aims at finding solutions to their needs and problems ranging from the beginning of their operations, namely production, to the end, namely marketing of the produce. It aims at making the sector efficient and viable, and the means envisaged are many and varied. These include availability of inputs, in particular credit, investment, technological upgradation, improvements in the management and marketing, incentives, land reforms, etc. In the execution of the policy, provision has been made for various agencies like the government, the cooperatives, the private sector, besides the individual agriculturist. Serious shortcomings. While much can be said for the policy, there are, however, some weaknesses that mark it. The first one is, the policy concerns itself with the long-standing problems in a two-decade time frame, but it seems to ignore the ongoing current issues which require to be dealt with on a priority basis. These issues are, for example, the declining trend in agricultural productivity, the decline in public investment in agriculture, uneven competition following the removal of quantitative restrictions, that is QRS, on imports, and the constitution of export subsidies by developed countries, the rising food and input subsidies, etc. Second one is the dependence on the private sector, that is corporatization of agriculture, may not be a feasible proportion for the private enterprise. The expectations that the private investment will flow into agriculture in a big way, and that too by adhering to environmentally non-degrading and socially acceptable norms, may not materialize. The third point is, the leasing of land to the private sector allowed by the policy will no doubt increase the size of land for operations, rendering benefits associated with large-scale production. But in practice, this may not work. The lessee may not feel encouraged to make investments in the land, in particular those of long-term nature like irrigation devices, drainage, pathways, post-harvest handling and storage facilities, etc. For this to happen, the policy should have provided for leasing on a long-term basis. The fourth one is, the policy, despite its provision for the removal of controls and restrictions, continues with production in some areas as also subsidies for inputs, etc. This will inhibit the growth of an efficient and viable agriculture, and for this reason the agricultural sector may not be able to gain much from the global market in the present regime of free trade. The fifth point is, the target of over 4% growth rate appears to be somewhat unrealistic. The ninth plan, that is 1997-2002, set a target of 4.5% growth rate for the agricultural sector. In the first 3 years of its working, that is 1997-2000, it has achieved a growth rate of only 2.7%. It means that if it is to achieve its target, the sector should grow at the rate of 5.7% in the remaining 2 years. This is far from likely to happen, with the growth rate of agriculture at 0.9% for 2000-2001. Thus, the growth rate of over 4% for 10 years envisaged in the policy may not be realized. to sum up the policy is very appropriate in several respects, but it is also wanting in some important ways.
With this, we have come to the end of Chapter 17 of Indian Economy, written by A.N. Agarwal, topic name Agriculture, Role, Progress and Policy. Now, we will start Chapter number 19, Land Reforms. Page number 257 to 277. Land Reforms. For raising production and ensuring incentives and fair rewards to cultivators, important institutional changes in the agrarian system or land reforms have been undertaken in the country. These are comprised of the following three elements: improvements in the condition of tenant cultivators, redistribution of land to favor small farmers, and consolidation of small and fragmented holdings to make them compact units. However, before discussing each one of these, we may first have an overview of land reforms in their entirety, as these are very much interconnected. Now, we will look at the meaning, importance, and progress in this regard. To comprehend these changes, we elaborate upon their various aspects. Beginning with the explanation of the concept of land reforms, we take up their importance and main features, as also the progress made so far in this direction. We also make appropriate suggestions to improve upon this institutional environment so vital to the healthy development of agriculture. Now, the concept of land reforms. We mean by land reforms such institutional changes as make property relations in respect of land favorable to the actual tillers of the soil, and which raise the size of small farms to make them viable units. The concept of land reforms thus encompasses two types of changes. One is related to agrarian relations between the owners of land and the tenants who cultivate the land. The reforms of these relations involve such changes in the conditions of tenancy that the tenants get incentives and justice in their farming operations. The second type of change concerns the size of the unit of cultivation. This involves reforms along two lines. One is such a redistribution of the ownership of land that a part of large-sized land is transferred to those who own very small-sized lands. Another line of reform concerns the small and scattered pieces of land which, though owned by single owners, amount to farming of small-sized unit located at various places. The reform in this case envisages consolidation of these dispersed units through exchange of pieces with other owners, so that the farming unit in each case becomes a compact unit fit for efficient farming. It may be useful here to refer to a viewpoint which would restrict the scope of land reforms only to owner-tenant relations. This narrow perception of land reforms considers the subject of the size of land as strictly outside the institutional field. According to this view, it is a technical matter, but this is wrong. Howsoever, one may categorize the two segments of land reforms. These are very closely interrelated. For example, the tenancy reforms, without ensuring a reasonably sized land for the tenant, will do no good to the actual tenant cultivator. Again, the smallholders, without their lands being augmented through transfer of some land from the large holders, will not be able to produce more and add to the national product. In the absence of such transfers, these lands being unviable will be producing much less than their potential. So is the case of small and scattered holdings. Taken as individual pieces, these can produce very little. However, when these are consolidated, these can produce much more than would be the case otherwise, because of the possibility of using to the fullest the inputs as also the labor. What comes out of this brief observation is that the progress of agriculture is intimately related to both type of changes. These changes, it may be added, are in essence institutional, because these bear upon tenants and owners in the first case and owners and beneficiaries in the second. As for technical elements are concerned, these are strictly inputs like water, seeds, fertilizers, implements, etc. These are directly related to the outputs. Institutional reforms, on the other hand, are indirectly related to output, as these provide a healthy environment for agricultural operations. We covered a brief introduction about the concept of land reforms.